I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, this is the designfootball.com podcast, which we are now regarding as the new home of Football Design Chat. My name is Jay. I am still sporadically the resident blogger on designfootball.com. Today I'm joined by Martin Leroy,
who is
a science teacher and a part-time kit designer, which is very interesting for us. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well. Well, that's a lie. I've been better, but at least I don't feel like I'm going to be sick now.
Well, let's give it an hour and then see how you feel. What is actually wrong with you?
Honestly, I don't know. It was my work night out last night. I had two pints and I came back in and I felt like I'd had about eight. And I went straight to bed and I've been asleep for about 13 hours. And I've just got up to do this.
Oh, we're so touched. Thank you for that. The reason, one of the many reasons why having Martin on this second designfootball.com podcast is he is a member of the website. You upload to the site very often, and or quite often, let's say.
Quite often. I think I could do better. I think that's okay. My level.
There's always room for improvement.
Always.
And what we didn't do on the last podcast, which was fascinating with John Devlin, it was I think maybe because it was all killer and no filler, we didn't actually give an idea of why we're running this podcast. So the website is a home for amateur designers, which we'll talk about, and also which strays into being professional designers. So we want to showcase the talents of people on the website, as well as talking about the world of football design, which encompasses kits, crests, stadiums, boots as well. We've got a section on the website for boots and training wear, everything that's related to football design we can talk about, but we want to have a focus on the website as well. So that's why it's one of the many reasons, as I say, why it's fantastic to have Martin on today. Martin, you have been involved with Kilmarnock FC, haven't you? And are you able to give us an idea of what's gone on there, how you got involved with Kilmarnock FC and what that led to?
Okay, so if we want to go right back to the very beginning of the story, it was when we were with TFG. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
So they did quite a lot of sort of Scottish kits and sort of lower league English kits, but then they sort of disappeared. What happened to them? Did they get bought over by someone?
Oh, I don't know details.
Details? Details? Who needs details?
Don't put me on the spot. We can discuss this.
Okay, so let's say they went out of business. Let's make it up. But just because...
We're not libel or slander as well. So they're doing wonderfully and... they're gone completely. So
okay,
they don't appear to be making kits anymore.
They went. Let's just say they went. So when they went, we obviously had to look for a new company to make our kits, and we got Lotto to do it, but it wasn't actually Lotto, it was some company was doing it through a Lotto contract and stuff like that. And we got our kits, and within a week of the launch, people were complaining because the colours were running in a football top. And we kept them for a season, and they were absolutely awful. The sponsors were coming off of them, things like that. So we chucked Lotto, and we decided to start making our own kits under our own brand name. So I should say, I'm saying we, but I just mean Kilmarnock, the team I support. I don't actually mean I was part of it at this time. So that first season, we made them, and they seemed to go down okay. But then, obviously, I sat, and my entire life I've just sat and doodled football kits and things like that. So I was on the Kilmarnock fans forum, and I was just posting my designs there of ideas of what we could do, since we actually had sort of free reign on what we could design and what we could actually put into production. And the person, sort of the third party who we were making our kits through, got in contact with me and said, I like your designs. Would you like to come and have a little meeting? And I thought, yeah, that sounds great. So I went down and he sort of showed me some bits and pieces about what he'd made from Kilmarnock and how the process worked and stuff like that. And I was very impressed. But he just got me to like do T-shirts and stuff. So I made a couple of T-shirts that went into the club shop.
Sorry, just you're just on a, so this is a Kilmarnock forum, is it, that you're uploading?
Yeah, it's just the fans forum, yeah.
What, just to give, so you suddenly get an email from the club that you've been designing. This sounds like a story that you would hear, like I remember a friend of mine wrote a story about when I was a kid, as a birthday present to me, he wrote a story about how I was kicking a football around in the local park and Kenny Dalglish pulled up in a limo and jumped out and went, you look good. Jump in. Come and play for Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
So this is...
like the everyone's fantasy, like you're sitting in the stadium, it's like, we need another substitute. You'll do. It was kind of what it was like. It was I think at the time I didn't really realise what it would lead into. It wasn't like the club who got in touch with me. It was just this guy, the third party person. And yeah, he was just like, I'll go for a meeting. I'll show you what to do. And I remember that first meeting with him. I was just completely blown away because I was like that, like caught in the headlights. And he was saying, oh, well, here's some of the samples that we've got. What do you think of that one? We tried to sublimate this here and this here and this here, but we don't think it worked. And then how about this one here? We've managed to get a shadow in it, but we think it's probably a bit too much. And then what about this one here? And the meeting just seemed to go so fast. And I was like, yeah, I'll do whatever. I'll do everything. Yeah, just whatever you want. So yeah, it was a bit like that. It was, just not expecting it to kick off as much because so I made those T-shirts. And then we'd already got our home top sorted for that season. And he showed me the home top, which was quite exciting because I hadn't been leaked or launched or anything like that. So I'd seen that. And then he gave me a freebie, one of my first of freebies. I'm sure we'll talk about my freebies more later on. So I got that top before it got released, before anyone had ever seen it, and I was like,
did you wear it? Were you allowed to wear it?
I'm sure he did say something along the lines of, like, don't go to any games wearing it or anything like that just yet, but you can wear it about the house and stuff, that's okay.
Yeah.
So I had that, and then, we'll get on to the we think football clubs are organised thing. They're just not. That top had been released, and they still hadn't done an away top yet.
What month are we talking about now? So I know you've written about this, but the dates are a little bit off, aren't they? So what seasons are we talking about?
Oh,
to confirm.
Put me on the spot here. So
no, I think it's 2011, 2012, isn't it? No, sorry.
No,
it's 2010-11, isn't it?
I think this one we're talking about just now is the 2009-2010 top.
Okay.
So we've got, I think, we're going back a season from the main event. So this one was a white top and it's sort of blue and gold trim when gold was back in fashion back then. And it was very much, they'd sort of given me ideas and I just had to draw them on Illustrator and then presented it back to them. And they said, yep, that looks good. Tweak this, tweak that. So a couple of tweaks. And I was like, yep, that looks good. I think we'll have that as the away top. So I was like, okay, excellent. And then within a month or so, it got made. And I should say, this is not how it happens normally. I've spoken to people who are designing kits. Like you said it in the last podcast, they're always working 2 years in advance. We're talking here about the home top being launched just after the season finished, and they still didn't have an away top yet. And that's the sort of time frame we were talking about, of getting this away top done.
There's two sides to this coin. So there's the idea that that's not professional and it should be done quicker and you should have 2 years of development, which the bigger brands do. So Adidas and Nike do have between 2.5 years to 18 months to 2.5 years, I would say. Things are subject to change, I think, as well, if the sponsor's likely to change, because then I think colours come into play. So we were going to use these colours, but now the sponsor's this. We've got an agreement with them that the third kit should incorporate their colour or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. The other side of that coin is that often they will say, "Oh no, we can't design a kit in that time frame." So a lot of the big thing is when there is a fantasy designer, someone comes forward and says, this should be the kit for next season. Well, it's impossible. We can't make that kit. Well, yeah, you can. It's been done. It happens like quite often that kits will be produced in only a few weeks for whatever reason. And that's also the argument for giving teams team wear is, oh no, we haven't got the time to develop something else. We can't develop a bespoke kit. We've just, say Adidas take over the contract, their argument will be, well, we have to give them team wear for the next season because we can't create a completely specific to them kit because we haven't got the time. Well, yes, you have. You can do it. And especially with the amount of money you've got, you can do it. So there's two arguments to that, isn't there? And whether it's a good thing or...
Yeah. I think there is. It is possible. I think there's definitely trade-offs, though, because I think if you spoke to Kilmarnock fans, one of the things they definitely say about the 1869 kits, that was our brand, is that they weren't the best fitting kits, and maybe the quality of how they were put together wasn't the best, and that was to my eternal frustration, because obviously I wanted to have that two-year development. Like, I had it in my head, I was like, I want to do this, I want to do this, this and this. So there is a trade-off, and that's certainly, for us getting a kit ready within a couple of months, there was definitely the trade-off of the actual quality of it. And so that's something you've got to look out for, I think. So that top, it got made, and I think it went down pretty well. Like, you always take the criticism of it, like, a little bit to heart when it's one of your tops. I'm sure it's the same for anyone on the website who gets criticism from someone. But it's actually creative. It's a constructive criticism, rather, sorry. It's always going to sort of get to you. So someone says, it's boring, it's rubbish, don't like that gold trim. And then you just want to jump in and try and defend it. But I think it was quite well received. It was okay. So that was the 2009-2010 kit. And then it was the next season after that, though, that I got involved a little bit more. So about halfway through the season, coming up to, well, I think it was just coming up to Christmas, the guy who I'd been speaking to says, so the chairman is wanting you to have a go at designing the home top and the away top. And I was like, well, this is it. Because, like, the away top was good. That was, like, excellent. I've designed the away top. That'll be there forever in history. But it was like, to design a home top would have been amazing. So again, I didn't have completely free reign on the home top. So the chairman that we had at the time had a meeting with the kit manufacturer, and he had this thing in his head about arrows or something like that. Like, because the first top that we'd had with them, we just had this little design feature, and they'd obviously designed it flat, just like how you would draw a picture of it. But when it actually got put together and made, they found out that it made this horseshoe shape on the side of the kit. So it was completely accidental that that ever existed, but the chairman was just like, oh, that's amazing, look at that, this lovely design feature. So he had this idea of this arrow that went down the side of the kit. So from front on, it was just a line, but it ended up this arrow. So if you have a look at that kit, it's on the sleeves, it's blue sleeves, and it's got a little gold arrow there, which the chairman sort of requested that should be there. And
right.
So, like, you could do bits and pieces to sort of decide how good that was, or what it looked like, sorry. Like, it wasn't fully creative freedom. But then I got told, the away kit this year, it's totally yours to do as you please with. So I had a couple of ideas. I drew up the kit, which, funny enough, it ended up being yellow and blue. Yellow with blue trim. but I'd actually originally decided to have it sky blue with chocolate brown, like that old Coventry kit, the old Coventry Admiral kit. Because I just thought,
okay.
I'd thought, I just want it to stand out. I want it to be something which people remember. But then they'd come back to me and said, it's a lovely design. We're not going to fault you on that. But sky blue and chocolate brown? I was like, all right, okay. Yellow.
The Italy have worn that, haven't they? They wore
they
it.
Did. Was it Euros that they wore it at?
Yeah, well, it's one of their very early kits, I think, was sky blue shirt with brown shorts and brown socks.
Yeah, I think that's like that was them sort of harking back to the days where they wore that. Yeah, I think it was
Confederations Cup, I think.
Yes, you're right, it was. It was the Confederations Cup.
They were terrible, though. I think they probably the worst ever World Cup winners in 2006. And then they went to Confederations Cup, I think, 2009, maybe. And they weren't good. And I don't know if they ever wore like the brown shorts and socks because they were so bad that they didn't play enough games. They were planning to wear them in like a knockout round or something and didn't get there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. That might not be wrong. That might not be right, but it's...
Let's go for that.
It doesn't go down. It's a better story, but it doesn't go down in history as like a classic one of their kits because wore it five times and lost all five games or something. Sorry, go on. You were saying so they didn't go with sky blue and brown. Shocker.
No, they didn't. So I can't imagine why. What's possible? Why would someone not want brown? But there we go. So we went with yellow and blue, which are our traditional away colours. It's what we've worn in the past as our away colours. And that got made as the away kit. And I went to Ibrox on the first day of the next season. And we wore it against Rangers and got beat, because that's what happens when you support a team like Kilmarnock and you go to Ibrox.
We won't go into the reasons why you get beat when you go to Rangers. I don't think we should discuss that bit, should we?
No, we won't talk about Scottish referees at all.
Yeah.
But it was quite cool seeing it there on the pitch, something that was completely mine, and then sort of looking around and there was people who'd bought it, and like I was literally sort of looking, going, "I designed that. That's me. That was that there. That was just."
It must not seem real. I mean, if you have an ambition as a football kit designer who grew up in Scotland, just seeing it worn, especially as you can't your team as well. So you support a team, and then who could they play against that would really be an honour if they wore their kit? It's like Rangers. It's too fast. Actually, it's too fast. Your progression is it angers me, but to get to exactly the pinnacle in the first time you ever see that kit getting worn that is entirely your own creation.
Yeah, it was utterly surreal. Like, even now, like when I go, like I'm in the north of England just now, but when I go back up and I see people walking about Kilmarnock and I'm like, oh, there's my kit. Like, even though it was years ago now, I'm so like, oh, there it is. Excellent. It's utterly surreal. Like, I remember when I was a kid, me and my friend who lived in the same street as me, we were both designing kits, just doing doodles and stuff like that. And I'd drawn a Kilmarnock one, and I'd sent it to Kilmarnock and got nothing back. And he'd drawn a Newcastle one. He was a Newcastle fan, and he sent it off to Newcastle, and he got, like, this fans pack back. And I was like, oh, this is just never going to happen. Like, nobody cares at Kilmarnock. But, yeah, it was utterly surreal. So that was good, being at Ibrox and seeing us wear that top. Was, well, what it seemed at the time like it would be unbeatable. But that changed later on, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, so this is sort of the next step. We'll jump a little bit here. So, as it turned out, although obviously a huge honour and this was fantasy being realised, to have your kit being worn like this. And what season are we talking about? We're now talking about 10-11 season, is that right?
This is the 10-11 season we're talking about.
Right, so 10-11 season. So this is the official away shirt this season. How did it sell?
Rubbish.
Okay, so this is where you would think the dream is reality kicks in again, and it's a bit like, okay, well, maybe this isn't going to be the perfect sort of end to this story is of this shirt being going down as a classic. And then
no, because obviously you're sitting there and I was pretty happy with what it designed, but for them to say, oh yeah, it's not really selling that well, so and it's like, but it's amazing, I did it. Have you not told them I did it? Because they'll buy it if they tell them I did it.
So you've written about this. So I'm just going to quote something that you've written on this.
Okay.
So at the end of... Yeah. So at the end of this season... This is just fascinating to me. The away top I designed for, and you've put 9-10, but I think it's 10-11, had been such a big flop in the shop that they were keeping it on a season in order to shift more units. The first thing that I react to that is, that's quite a jaunty way of describing your desolation. Just this the horrendous experience of everything going fantastically well and then being told, oh no, nobody really likes it or wants it or anything. So then it gets carried on to another season. This blows my mind as well, that a business decision is taken. You know that thing that's not selling well at all? Well, we're not actually going to counteract that with another kit that will improve the situation. We're actually going to carry that one on because we've bought a load of stock and now we need to get rid of that stock, so we're going to carry it on for another season. That decision of what we're going to be wearing next season, for that to influence that decision is surprising.
Well, it wasn't even the first time that they'd done it. I think that season they had registered the purple away top from the season before as their third kit because they still had units of that left. So it wasn't even the first time that they'd done it. So they carried on the purple one into the next season, and then they'd got it shifted. Like, if you go onto the club website from the posts of about that time, you see that all of the youth teams are all wearing the purple kit because it was just that was their way of getting rid of it. Just give it to the youth teams. That's what they'll wear all the time. They won't wear blue and white stripes. They'll just wear this purple kit. And then obviously they said, yep, we've got enough of them. Gone now. Let's go onto the yellow kit. Let's feed that through. So they wore that again for the next season, for the 11-12 season, as their away kit again. Yep. And that was, yay. Great.
That is great. And it's, again, it's a little bit disappointing. It's a little bit like, oh, it's great. They're going to be wearing my kit again. But it's a bit like, the reasoning behind it is disappointed. But as things turned out, not such a terrible thing.
No, it wasn't such a terrible thing because as we went through that season, we seemed to be having quite a good run in the League Cup. We played our local rivals, Ayr United, in the semi-final, got through to the final where we played Celtic. And then I remember seeing like a post saying, well, the League Cup rules say that if home kits clash, then each team wears their away kit. So Celtic wore the off-grey one with the green pin hoops. And the green sleeves, if you remember that one. They wore that, and we wore the yellow away kit, which I designed. So it got worn in a cup final. And of course...
We should add that clearly this was a cup final that Kilmarnock were going to lose. They were playing against
them. Absolutely. Like, I'd been to two League Cup finals in the past where we got hammered 3-0 by Celtic. And then, even worse, it was like, we've actually got a chance against Hibs and then got beat 5-1. Which is absolutely distressing. So it's like, well, not going to build it up too much. We're playing Celtic, but we'll see what happens. You never know. But got through to 80 minutes. It was still 0-0. Then on the 85th minute, nice bit of play down the left wing. Cross comes in. And then Dieter van Tornhout heads it in. And we're 1-0 up against Celtic. And I'm looking at the clock going, this is going to be the longest 5 minutes of my life now. But we saw out those 5 minutes and we won the League Cup against Celtic in a kit that I designed.
So it is quite a story. Fantastic victory for Kilmarnock.
Yeah.
And great for you. Sadly, the day was actually overshadowed by the death of Liam Kelly, Kilmarnock midfielder. His father died in the immediate aftermath of during the celebrations, in effect, and sort of stopped the celebrations, obviously because it was such a terrible thing and sudden death like that.
Yeah.
I think he died of a heart attack, was it?
Yeah, he had a heart attack just before the final whistle. He was sitting not that far away from me, so I saw the commotion. And then after the full-time whistle went, I saw Liam Kelly run up the tunnel, and I was thinking to myself, something's off there. But yeah... It stuck with me for a little while after that because obviously you knew something had gone wrong. We came out the ground and I was getting driven back to the train station and it was on the radio that that had happened. So for a little while, that sort of overshadowed the cup final win. But I think now, I mean, people still remember it happened, obviously. It's not something that you just forget. But certainly the cup final's taken precedent over that now, and yeah. We see it more as we won the cup rather than it being a tragic day. So,
yeah, I think... Don't Kilmarnock claim to have won the treble now, is that?
Oh, yes, this thing. After that, we... Like, I'd drawn up a little logo, like, you know, it was based on the Rugby World Cup kits. So we're going to rugby here, but you know how in the sleeve they've got the outline of the Webb Ellis Trophy with the years that they won it underneath?
Yeah.
And I thought, that'd be quite cool if we had that on our kit for the next season. So I drew up something like that with League Cup and then 2012 underneath. But then it sort of progressed into all three of the major trophies we'd won, and that was the last out of the three major Scottish trophies that we had to win. So we'd completed the treble. But then they totally ran with, we've won the treble, which I think was a bit optimistic, saying that we'd won the treble when in fact there was about 90 years like in the difference between our first Scottish Cup win and our winning in the League Cup. So, I mean, no one's ever said that a treble has to be completed within a year.
I don't think everyone.
Maybe they have felt the need to say it.
Probably because it's something of a given. The story, obviously, what a great culmination of this journey this journey that seems to have taken about 5 minutes of you doodling something on your PC to then that kit being worn by your favourite team in one of their greatest victories in history. One of their three greatest victories in history, technically.
Yes.
So it is a great story, and I'm incredibly jealous. But it is a great... It gives people an idea that although there are established routes in place, so you go to... You become a graphic designer, then you get an internship, or you then get a low role as an assistant at a manufacturer, and then eventually after 10 years you get to start designing some kits with someone else, and you've bypassed that whole system. Does that not make you feel a sense of shame?
No, it worked out pretty well for me. I'm not shameful about it at all. It's, if I'm being very selfish about it, it's worked out pretty well for me. But it was just being at the right place at the right time. Like, Kilmarnock were making their own kits. No one else was making their own kits back then, I don't think, in the UK anyway. So there was like no other club it would have happened with. I was just lucky.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I was being maybe devil's advocate there a little bit, but it obviously with the website lightdesignfootball.com, to have that, and initially when we set up the website, this was the dream that members, and it didn't really happen in your case because everything you achieved was separate to the website. But there are cases of there's a guy called Irving Alberto Perez who posts on designfootball.com as Irving Pisseni, I think. And he is very interested because he would upload hand-drawn pictures, which is very different in style to most of them. And most of them are done on Photoshop or Illustrator or something like that. And a company called Ramai Sports spotted these designs on the website and contacted him, and he's now like the head sportswear designer or head kit designer, certainly at Ramai Sports, I think.
That's impressive. That's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and well, it's impressive because they make the Jamaica kit.
So, right. Okay.
Yeah, so they make Jamaica kit. I think they make Al Shabaab as well, and probably some other teams. So it's just going from, again, it's the same principle, just doodling something, uploading it to the internet, and suddenly you've made yourself a career and a life and probably a pension and so on.
I feel a bit less special now.
Yeah, sorry to do this to you, but okay. Well, if I'm not sure Jamaica have won. Oh, did they win the? They might have actually won the. Did they win the Gold Cup or something? Did they beat America in the Gold Cup? Maybe
that,
they did. I don't know.
That rings they a did, bell.
They did something quite impressive quite recently, I think. So yeah, maybe it is competed with you on that. The other person I mean, there are professional designers who are members of the website as well, so we won't go too much into that. But people who have started from an amateur status and then gone on to see their kits made. I mean, Matthias or Matthias Pecorari, I think his name is, who posts as Matu Peko. He won a competition to design Tigre, which is I think an Argentine team. Is it an Argentine team?
I believe it was Argentine. Yeah.
I think they're Argentine, and they played in the Copa Libertadores in a kit that he had designed, and it was a great kit as well, Kappa kit.
I remember that, yeah.
So that was a really good one. But prior to that, the only thing that had happened, and at the time I went crazy for it, was a guy called Steve-O. He designed Liverpool kits all the time.
Yep.
And a few years ago, his kit got made, I mean, not like clandestinely, was made in the Far East, and suddenly you saw people wearing a new Liverpool kit, which wasn't a Liverpool kit at all, but they'd lifted the design off the website and started producing this this yellow and red thing, which was great. It was a great kit, but it's obviously dodgy in loads of different ways.
I think there's a nice beauty to that, that they've seen his design and they've obviously thought, that's really good, so that surely this must be the new Liverpool kit. So they've just gone and made it, obviously to try and sort of jump ahead. So I reckon what will happen over there is they'll keep an eye out for like leaks, and they'll go and just try and make that kit to sort of get ahead of the actual launch. So he's obviously been lucky there. I suppose, well, is it lucky? Sealing your design and making it for a profit?
Oh, yeah. The I mean, it's happened a few times since. There was a big Reddit story about an Atletico kit. The season when Barcelona had the diagonal half, like half Monaco, half Barcelona kit. Do you remember that one where it had thin stripes? That someone, when they saw that leaked, they did Atletico's kit in the same design, and then suddenly that was being made and that was being mass produced as well. So that there's a long Reddit story explaining that, which is a similar story to yours, I think, that the quick reactions to as this story develops. But it's happened so many times since, so many kits, Milan kits, not necessarily from our website, but just anything that gets posted
I'm waiting in eternal readiness for someone to take that Pumas top that I did and think that that's going to be a real top and make that.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting there for it.
That, well, I can't actually say I'm going to buy it because you're not allowed to buy it if someone does that, but I would need it in my life. If you haven't seen this, then go onto the website and search. I suppose Pumas would probably find it, or if you just search for Martin Leroy as one word, is it? Is that how you post it?
Yeah, just all one word. Yeah.
All one. If you post it, it's all one word. If you search under the galleries, Martin Leroy is one word, you'll find his Pumas shirt, which is just mind-blowingly good. There are several examples of designers, amateur designers, coming good, I suppose, or dreams being realised. So that's a great.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Great thing is obviously a great story for you. That is a story of incredible success that you've had with one of your designs. Subsequent to the League Cup victory, were there any other kits that you designed for Kilmarnock?
After the League Cup victory, it kind of got a bit strange for reasons between the chairman and the company, which I won't go into probably because I'll get sued because he's a lawyer, so I'll stay out of that. But I did design a few more kits. Like, I'd really put a lot of effort into coming up with a kit for our 50th anniversary of winning the league that was just a nice plain blue and white stripes, but had just nice details in it for that. But then they used a top very similar to that at the wrong year, so we couldn't do that one. But then with somebody else who knew the guy who made the kits, I designed what was a completely wild out there Kilmarnock top, which I've sent you pictures of before. And so, I mean, our traditional kit's blue and white stripes, but this one was diagonal with the lines, with the stripes fading in and out from different angles. It's, we might have to put a link to it somewhere. Oh, no, but it's on the website.
It is on designfootball.com, yeah.
I put it up quite recently. So, yeah, it's hard to describe. So I think the best, it's not really podcast material. You've got to have a look at this picture of this. It was different. Yeah, it was different. What did you think of it?
I think you did three, didn't you? There was, it yes. was like the entire template was used for the entire range, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Were any of them actually released?
None of them were released. I think we'd originally gone for maybe doing an away kit. So the away kit would have been the yellow one. It was sort of a yellow outline. Yellow background with the blue stripes going across it. But that never got made into a kit for various reasons.
I think that was my favourite out of them because there was a decent contrast between the yellow and the blue, if I remember rightly. So it's like a diagonal stripe effect that fades out, and it's very interesting. The fascinating thing would have been if it had actually been released as the Kilmarnock home shirt because of the potential reaction. So this is something that we've talked about before on various podcasts, not on this one, but on Football Attic podcasts, and we've discussed why you would release a shirt that you know is going to be controversial. It's not necessarily something you put into the design process, but if it had been released, you'd agree it would be pretty controversial, that one.
Oh, it would have been. There, I know people who would have absolutely detested it and says, I'm handing my season ticket back in if we'd worn that. But then I know, because I put it on the Kilmarnock form, like I did like here's a picture of the back of it, here's a picture of the sleeve sort of thing. Like when I'd stopped working for them, I says, well, I'm just going to show them all the kits that never actually got made. So I showed them that one, and it was that. People were saying if that was the kit, I'd have handed in my season ticket, and other people were like, PMing me saying, are you going to sell me that kit because it's the best thing I've ever seen? So
there is value in that because immediately there's a news story. Now I talked last week to John about the Liverpool away shirt from 2013-14, I think, and it horrendous, but it made, and the third kit had like odd socks as well, and there's so many, in the end, I suppose it is column inches that are dedicated to these awful kits that a team has released. Now, with Liverpool, it's, you don't know whether it's, everyone's going to see the Liverpool kit anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So you're not reaching a wider audience by having a grotesque kit. But for a team like Kilmarnock, who are modestly sized, let's say, that would have been a news story that, I think it would have spread a little bit, wouldn't it? This is what Kilmarnock are doing. Certainly amongst the kit geek world, there would have been supporters from other teams, would you agree, who would have added a comment on it? Because
yeah,
everyone has an idea of what the traditional look is.
Yeah, like no one's ever going to come along and say, I'm looking to buy an interesting football top. Oh, there's a blue and white striped top. It's just, it's never going to happen. But if you can... if people are looking for football tops and then there's this one with faded lines and all this texture thing going on with it, then they're probably going to want to buy it. And it puts Kilmarnock in the limelight a little bit. And I think it would have if we'd picked those tops. It would have stood out. And like there's a lot of SPL teams. I don't even know what their kits look like this season because they're not exciting. But I think everyone would have known what the Kilmarnock top would have looked like that season if that had been the case, if we'd gone with that one.
It's for it to become, it's very difficult to plan something to go viral, but that's probably the thinking behind releasing these sorts of shirts. So this one, I quite liked it, but it, knowing it would have been controversial. There was a team recently called Windsor FC, and I actually saw someone wearing this shirt the other day, like in the street. He didn't. Yeah, is I don't know why he came to that conclusion that he would buy this shirt, but they released, and there's an article about this on the website. They released a kit because it was a tie-in with a sponsor. You can read about it. I'm not going to go into great details, but essentially they released a shirt that was a Union Jack, but in Italian colours, so green, white, and red. And it was horrendous. One of the worst shirts you've ever seen in every possible way. But no one had heard of Windsor FC before this happened. No one had ever bought a Windsor FC, or very rarely people would buy Windsor FC shirts. People actually would go out and buy that because they've read about it, because they know about it. So it's about the conversion rate. So if you create a fantastic shirt, that's great. A very classy, simple, clean-looking shirt that everyone who sees, who's associated with the club season, goes, oh, well, that's a nice shirt. Well, your shirt sales are going to be pretty good this season. It's almost better to create an horrendous shirt that will be seen by more people, will be bought by a much smaller percentage of the people who see it. But because it's been seen by so many people, the percentage doesn't matter as much because the overall sales go up. So, again, it's a depressing thing to happen, but it would be getting that balance right, especially as a Kilmarnock supporter. You design the shirt, so you like the shirt. But when it comes to whether you believe it should be a Kilmarnock shirt or not, that's where you're going to be torn, where you look at the finances and say, well, actually, we make a lot of money off the back of this, but are we doing something that we will be ashamed of in a few years' time, that we took the classic look of the Kilmarnock shirt and we did this to it?
I think Kilmarnock would be on the very edge of doing that. Like, okay, so you've got like Windsor FC, no one's ever heard of them, so they realistically have got nothing to lose when they do something like that. The only people that they're going to annoy by having a strange kit like that is going to be the 11 people who wear it on the Saturday. It's the same with, do you remember those two tops that came out quite recently from, I've got this written down somewhere, Cultural Leonesa. They had the tuxedo kit, and then there was CD Lugo, who had the beer, so there it was like the head of the beer was like a stripe across the top of it, and the rest of it was orange down the bottom. It's like what you said, no one has ever heard of them, so they've only benefited from that. But when you get to slightly bigger clubs, Kilmarnock would be on the edge of it, I think. Like, of annoying enough people by not going traditional.
Mm.
Liverpool, like you said, not entirely sure why they did go down that, because they are such a worldwide popular team that they don't necessarily need those column inches for having such a bad top. So it was a bit of a mystery why they went down that road with Warrior.
Just a note on something you said there. The cultural, could you say that
Cultural team? Leonesa?
That, them. I think the outfield shirt was a normal tuxedo. So it was black black tie, let's say. And I think the goalkeeper shirt was maybe the reverse. So it was like...
Oh, was it?
I think so, a white tux with a white tie, or maybe even a red tie or something. But it was... that was... bow tie, sorry. That was... I actually saw that one and thought, yeah, I might go for that one. But again, to be a little bit contrary and not go for the standard, well, everyone's got the tuxedo football shirt. I don't want to. I want to stand out from the crowd, and I'll wear a white one instead. But yeah, the approach, and it's not something you would have had. Well, I suppose you did have it to a certain extent with Coventry having a brown away kit. But the idea of being controversial to balance the books one way or another. You're almost saying it's already over. You've already lost. I worry that that's the case sometimes. So we're not necessarily using your shirt as an example of that, but it can be construed that way, that a club has given up the ghost of actually doing things for the right reason.
I think with those two examples, I think they do sit a bit uneasy with me because they're quite clearly trying to get them to stand out and trying to get the news headlines. I think I prefer it when a team gets, like, well, let's say famous amongst people like us, amongst football shirt fans. That's better. Like, for example, do you remember... I used to have these kits. Do you remember the Uganda under 21 kit from the mid early 2000s? You're gonna have to Google it.
Do I remember it? Yeah. No, look, no one's forgotten that one. The Uganda under 21 kit from 2004-05, wasn't it?
Is that the, it was about then. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So I had that top. Like, I honestly, they were never gonna make that kit and say it was going to be a huge success and they were going to sell shirts because people are going to want them, but they were so horrifically horrible that people did want them, and they must have sold a lot of them.
Did describe it.
Oh, white.
Okay.
Then it had, I don't even know what the Uganda flag looks like. I assume it was the Uganda flag colours. It was black, gold and red, offset stripes of different height making their way up the top, and then flying across the middle of the top were three cranes.
Cranes as in the bird?
Yeah, as in the bird, not the heavy lifting equipment.
Well, that would have been preferable. Yes, and that would, you know what, I think I wonder whether that was for news headlines. Yeah, I think maybe that was just, they thought that's what a football kit should look like, and that's how it came about.
Well, I had another one that was definitely not their intention, because I'm sure I read a story where they complained about it. Deportivo Wanka.
Yeah.
Do you remember that shirt?
Well, that it says it has the word Wanker on the front.
Yeah, apparently they were not impressed by the amount of attention that they were getting from the UK.
You can understand that, because it's just, it's unfortunate that the name of their football club would be regarded as controversial elsewhere. But you've got to appreciate the sales, the amount of inquiries they must have got to actually, why are all these people from England wanting our shirt? We'll have to look into this. Oh, that's the reason. Okay. So that, I don't know. Any reason to get money in, especially when you can take the moral high ground and say, well, it's just our team name, and if you're going to be puerile, then that's your problem, it's not, and we'll just take the money and run, thanks. But I don't know, it's depressing, but I wouldn't want it any other way. I wouldn't want those shirts not to exist. Wouldn't want to support a team who had done that. That's the thing,
you're always going to annoy someone.
You've actually worn, are we allowed to say, you wear that at games, don't you? Have you worn it to matches?
I've worn it to one match so far, because I only got my hands on it quite recently, even though it got made a little while ago. So maybe I should perhaps say that I designed these kits and they got made into prototypes rather than them just being drawings, so that we could actually show the club and try and convince them to make them. So I've got the prototype home shirt, and I've got it sitting upstairs, and I've worn it to one game, and no one said anything to me. No one came up, but I could see people sort of mouthing off in the distance. It's like, what kit's that? I've never seen that kit before. Like, just having a... But I didn't get the reaction that I'd hoped.
I kind of like the idea that the fans at a ground are suddenly worrying that they've lost a season somewhere. Like, what was happening in my life? Where was that a particularly heavy year at university when we wore that kit? But yeah, I think that the possibility is that maybe people would think it's a training top or something. It's not that it is of a training top style, but that tends to be the way, doesn't it, when there is a permutation of the home shirt, that it's maybe a training top or a pre-match top or something like that. So maybe that's what they concluded. Yeah. But
I think that's what most people probably thought.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we've talked a lot about the nature of being an amateur kit designer and becoming, in effect, a professional kit designer. We're not going to be as vulgar as to discuss money, but you did see your kit get made. So that is... Would that...
Yeah, I got a lot of freebies over.
Okay. Well, that's... You getting your shirt would be enough for most people, I think. So
probably. I would have been happy with that.
Have you got one with the embroidery for that final?
Yes, so I got it. So I'd obviously had that top, but I'd worn it like playing football and just worn it about, so it was a bit tatty and stuff like that. But I got another one off the guy who made them with the full League Cup final patches on the sleeves, the embroidery on the front saying Cup final, whatever date it was. And I got Van Tornhout on the back of it, the guy who scored the winning goal. And I got him to sign it as well. So I've got that sitting upstairs.
Okay. It was a silly question, really. I would have hoped if you'd said, no, I didn't bother. Wasn't something I was really interested in. It doesn't surprise me that you own that. Okay, we do have to give the pros their dues as well. So with Christmas coming, and we did this with John Devlin last week, so we should probably talk about this. I feel a need to ask people if they celebrate Christmas. Do you celebrate Christmas?
I'm a teacher, so I celebrate the Christmas holidays, yeah.
That is the correct answer. That is the perfect... that could be classed as a secular answer, which is fantastic. It's exactly what we need. So what kits do you want for Christmas?
One of the kits which I'm thinking about getting for Christmas, you talked about in the last podcast. Okay, I don't think either of you were very positive about it, but I really like it. The Belgium away kit.
No, we weren't negative about it. John was, I think. I quite like it. It's just the reasons behind it. This is the cycling top, and it is nice, but I don't know why. I don't know why they've made a cycling top into a football shirt, but it is good, yeah.
I know why they've done a cycling top, because it's Belgium. They can't put waffles in the front of it, so they've got to put something on it. So, I mean, Eddy Merckx is a legend in Belgium. He's a legend in the world of cycling. So maybe it's because we're not Belgian, we can't sort of see that that's such a big thing, but that is like part of their national identity. So they've taken something to do with that and they've put it in their football top. It's the same as Scotland pulling tartan and plastering it all over their top. Maybe we just don't understand it as much, I think.
Okay. That's fair enough. And you make an excellent argument, but I think maybe you need to declare an interest, because as I'm sitting here looking at you, you're wearing a cycling shirt.
I forgot the video on. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so we think there is bias involved there, but
perhaps
obviously,
yeah.
Anyone who's massively into cycling is gonna like, and football and kit design, is gonna like the new Belgium away shirt, which is a great one. I actually quite like it, but I'm confused, which is another story. The Belgium home shirt is one we forgot to talk about last week. That's been very, very well received. But I looked at it again today, and it's very, very black as well, isn't it?
I'll bring it up again. I have looked at it. So Belgium home, if you can hear my keys typing. So my immediate impressions, I think, where it's so much better than what they had before. So going back to the conversation you had about pulling in a new brand to come and make something for you, they'd obviously just been given a straight template when they went to Adidas. So this is like the first Adidas kit they've had, which is going to be bespoke to them. And I like it. I think you're right, there's a lot of black in it, but it seems to be that Adidas this year are doing that. They're bringing in a lot more of the secondary colour into the kits. So the Scotland top was exactly the same. They've got too much white in it. But that Belgium kit, I think it's a nice balance. There is a lot of black in it, but I do like it. It's quite nice.
Yeah, what people might not have noticed is it is the classic, it's in the colours of the classic Belgian flag colours. Belgian flag colours. See, Andrew Castle was doing this, and I think it maybe is catching. There was the Davis Cup final the other day, and for his whole commentary, Andrew Castle described the Belgians as the Belgians.
He did, yeah. It was something really frustrating me when I was watching that. But
this is like, surely this is a very educated public school boy who's like been a broadcaster and a journalist for 20 odd years, and he uses the word Belgians to describe people from Belgium who are actually Belgians. So yeah, that's apparently catching. So I'm now, yeah, or maybe catching on.
You've got to get your correct denonym.
That's right. Oh no. Don't use words that I don't know the meaning of. I've already misused a word that is plaguing me now. That's probably misusing that word as well. Anyway.
Just say it confidently. No one will question it.
No one will ever question it, yeah. That's the plan. What people won't have noticed is that even though it's got the Belgium tricolour or tricolour, I suppose, French is one of the languages, it's in those colours. The yellow on that shirt is actually like vault yellow, so it's the bright luminous yellow on that, which people might not realize, but I quite like that. You had to spot it.
I had spotted that. I quite liked it as well. I think if you are going to go and look at some of the kits I've done on the website, I put up a Kilmarnock top recently where I'd kind of stolen that idea, and I put the highlights in that top in, because obviously yellow's our secondary color, and I put them in that sort of vault yellow as well. I do like the vault yellow, and I know that John was speaking about it in the last podcast, saying he thinks that's where the sort of the designs can start to go, sort of the very bold colours. So maybe this is the start of it. We're seeing it in this Belgium top.
Yeah, the bold colours coming back. Yeah, it's something that you wouldn't think would work, because it should jar, because it's you recognise the colours and then that goes against it, but it actually works really well. So they've done really well with that. It surprises me, especially with a long sleeve shirt. The proportion of black is going to be very high compared with red, but yeah, the kit works out. Any other Euro 2016 kits that you like?
I quite like the Czech Republic one. I'm not usually that big on the Puma tops, but there's just something about it, a je ne sais quoi, that I don't really know why I like it, but I saw it and I thought, I like that. It's nice.
Okay. Yeah, I looked at that and it doesn't seem of this time. I don't know whether it seems it seems ahead of its time, or if it harks back to, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, I don't know, but Puma seem to always do their own thing. They don't seem to want to go along with the trends that...
No,
certainly,
especially with the African ones. They've always been very wild with the African tops.
Yeah, they were good last year. The Garnish, or 2 years ago, I suppose, 18 months ago, the Garnish shirt for the World Cup was one I liked, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do tend to do their own thing. Anything else for Christmas then?
Well, I think my main Christmas present I'm going to be getting is New Zealand citizenship.
Okay. I was thinking maybe kit related, but why is that kit related?
Okay, first of all, I should explain. I'm getting citizenship. It's not like I'm going to move there or anything. My dad was born in New Zealand, so I have technically had citizenship since I was born. But it's time to make it official. And just throughout my childhood, I was pretty convinced that I was a good enough footballer to play for New Zealand. So I remember, I remember my dreams being absolutely dashed when they came and played Scotland at Easter Road, and I realised they weren't actually one of the worst teams in the world. They were okay, and I probably wasn't going to be able to do that. But just have it, I want that dual nationality thing where I've got options. I know Scotland are getting worse and worse, but I still think they're probably too good for me to play for them. But New Zealand's reasonable. I thought New Zealand was reasonable.
Yeah. I had a similar thing with Algeria as a kid. I would have had no eligibility for Algeria, but because of sort of family history, I thought I could somehow get my way into their national team eventually. It was very unlikely on many, many, many counts. Okay, so you're going to be playing for New Zealand soon. That's to be honest, with your the way you go about things, it wouldn't surprise me. Well, your ambitions.
I'm already preparing my retirement from international football letter as we speak after my 5 caps that I'm going to get.
Look out for that. Okay, the football kits are not the only thing that you design. Now, this is staggering. Okay, stadiums. Tell us how you got into designing stadiums.
Well, again, as a kid, it was just drawing stadiums. I don't know. Just football and design were just two things I liked. So I used to doodle stadiums and stuff like that. But then Google came out with a program called SketchUp, which, first of all, it was free, so it wasn't like AutoCAD or something like that, where you could actually draw them. You could make them 3D, you could see them. And I got right into that very quickly and moved from just like drawing Rugby Park, making it better and better and better, to actually designing my own stadiums. So Google for a while had this thing called the 3D warehouse, where you could just make your own 3D designs of anything and put them up there. So I contributed to there for quite a few years, just designing stadiums as well.
Again, go to the website, have a look at, there are several of these on Design Football.
Yeah, and put a few there as well, yeah.
Yeah, and some of them are animated, aren't they, as well?
Yes, I animated the one that I did that was after my frustrations of the London Olympic Stadium, of them saying, no, we're not going to turn it into a football stadium. Nope. Oh, actually, yes, West Ham are going to play there. And then them just having this absolute nightmare of actually trying to make it ready for football to be played on it, so you're not 3 miles away from the track. I decided to sort of how they should have done it thing, so it's a little animation, a little GIF that loops that shows you how they could have done the stadium so that bits of it could be reused and it would be a reasonable football stadium, not an athletics stadium.
Incredibly, that isn't the most interesting London-based stadium that you've uploaded to the website. Tell us what else you did.
So it was a competition that was going on, wasn't it, for London FC? Is that right?
Yeah, or it was make another team. Yeah, I suppose it was London FC or London United or something like that. Yeah.
Some sort of United London team. And then I think you'd said to me maybe you should make a ground for it, and then you told me that I should try. I don't know London very well. You had a very specific place in mind.
Oh, did I? Was there a couple? There's one in the city, isn't there? There's an expanse of green in the city that I don't know why there is. It's like a courtyard, but is it football pitch size? But I don't. Well, it wasn't my idea to do what you eventually did, was it?
Oh, you were. No, the one that I eventually did was my idea. I'd gone onto Google Maps and I was going, where is there space in London City Centre for this London FC team to play if I was going to design a stadium? And then I noticed that there was quite a large space in London where no buildings were currently built, the River Thames. So I drew up a design for a football stadium that sat on a bridge over the River Thames.
Yeah. So, I mean, I implore you to go and look at this. So this is, and it's not, you're not, this isn't sort of an alternative Wembley stadium that has the two towers instead of the arch or something like this. This is meticulous detail. And Martin has designed a football stadium on Blackfriars Bridge. And it's unbelievable. And every time I cross Blackfriars Bridge or see Blackfriars Bridge, I imagine it with a stadium on top of it instead of what it is, the state it is in now. It's absolutely staggering. So, yeah, many, many strings to your bow. Professional footballer for New Zealand, kit designer for Kilmarnock, and stadium designer, stadium architect. So the one thing that I haven't seen from you, and this is tenuous, but we probably should talk about it, because I thought I was going to talk about it last week, but we didn't. You don't design boots, do you? Have you ever designed a football boot?
No, it's nothing that I've had a little play about once or twice to see if I could do something, but no, boots it's not something that I'm as interested in, no.
But when you're playing for New Zealand, you will have to wear boots.
I'm just going to wear black Puma Kings. That'd be me.
Yeah, the purist.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring this up is Adidas have released a pair of boots, yeah, that are laceless, entirely laceless. They are called the Adidas Ace GTI 2016. Have you seen these?
I've seen these. I don't know. Like, I used to play football quite a lot, or a long time ago though. But I don't know how it's going to work. I always wanted my football boots to be like quite tight on my feet, so they weren't moving around, and I can't help but feel that something that won't have laces is just going to be like a slipper. Like, no matter how you design it to get your feet in it, there's got to be some sort of give, and it's just going to be running around in flip-flops. That's all I can imagine when I see them.
I saw a pair of these a while back, and about 5 years ago there was futsal, which is like a poncy version of five-a-side football, which I should retract that. I do quite like the idea of it, but they play with a size 4 ball, and I can't get on board with that. But in futsal, there were, because that's like indoors, so you have like a rubber sole or something. I don't really know.
Yeah.
So there were slip-on trainers for that, which a few years ago, which I really like the look of. So now that's come into 11-a-side football with Adidas have done something. I think you'd need something like a power lace, like Back to the Future power lace, wouldn't you? If you're going to go laceless, all right, you don't want to tie a bow, but you've got to have... Or that Puma disc thing. Do you remember the Puma disc where you just turned a dial and that decided how tight the trainer was?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I know in cycling, bring back cycling. I know that in some cycling shoes, there's like a little disc that you can turn to tighten up your shoes. So I'd imagine it'd be very similar to that. But it sounds like a bit clunky for a football boot, though.
Yeah. Oh, that shot's gone out for a throw because it came off the side of his dial.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe that's why Adidas didn't include the dial on the lace-up shoe, the laceless football boots. Okay. That has been fantastic. Was there anything else you wanted to discuss?
There was nothing else I had in mind, no.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. I've very much enjoyed it. I don't know. I think people will have enjoyed listening to you and your stories. So thank you very, very much for coming onto the podcast. How has it been for you?
Oh, it's been good. I barely feel like I've been ill at all now. So I feel refreshed and I'm ready for a lovely weekend.
We'll have to. That will have to be the curer of ills. The designfootball.com podcast will heal you. So yeah, come along. Yeah, thanks very much for that. Martin's work, I think we've mentioned it, but you should really head over to our website and check out Martin's work. And there's probably ways of finding him on the other things he mentioned. So is it Google SketchUp? Is that the one?
Yeah, Google SketchUp is, they've actually sold it to some company called Trimble now, but if you search for 3D Warehouse, then you'll find it.
3D Warehouse. So see if you can find his work on there. That's worth taking a look at as well. But a lot of his stadium designs are on designfootball.com. So thank you, Martin. As I always say, head over to the website. Not just Martin's work. There's plenty of other people who do who upload their sterling efforts to the website. Follow us on Twitter, Design Football. Like our Facebook page, designfootball.com. You can get in touch with me on Twitter if you want. I'm J29ers. So give me a shout and tell me I'm a moron if you like. That's fine. We'll speak to someone new next week, and hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. Oh, last thing, I need to thank Chris Oakley of the Football Attic, who helped enormously with the setting up of this podcast, although he probably would be ashamed. So thanks very much, and we'll speak to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Martin.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.